So
Thursday, November 18th, State Board Commission of the Port of Kingston Authority. We are going to call the meeting to order. Let's see, we have one more. He's here. Okay, he's here. Just get his coffee.
Yeah, he's right there. Coming out.
Okay, opening remarks. I don't really have any opening remarks today other than we're going to talk about budgets and we're going to talk about capital budgets. I do want to congratulate Tim Finley and our team for our entire team for the bond transaction.
Yeah.
And as they say, in lots of business and nonprofit work, no money, no mission. So the fact that we priced those bonds, I'm sure Tim will give us an update on that here in a minute. With that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to
I was just going to say on top of that, Tuesday we went to the market and bond offering in 20 years with proceeds to use to fund this acceleration of Houston Ship Channel. So even though as Chairman had mentioned, that day was a tough day for the bond market. The porch credit was very well received, and in fact, it was oversubscribed by 3 times, meaning that we had over $1 billion for bonds with a par value of $320 million. So that's resulted in an interest rate of 2.78, which is less than what we thought was going to be the 3%. So it really illustrates the strength and stability of Port Houston, and I just want to recognize the dedication also of our staff with Tim and Roland and David and Eric and Jenna Murray, who works with Eric, and a whole host of other people. So great effort there, and really pleasing that we achieved that. So thank you all, and we're off and running. That's all I have.
It takes a lot of work and a lot of dotting I's and crossing T's, but the key is making sure that when you bring that team together, that it gets done. And it was a tough day in the bond market. It was really a nasty day.
Yeah.
And for us to have the 3-to-1 oversubscription and the rate that we ended up getting, given the complicated market that day, it shows the strength of our credit, the strength of our team that we put together to get it done. I just am really proud of everyone. When do you close?
Close December 9. December 9. Coming up.
Commissioners, any comments or questions?
Great job. Well done.
Excellent job.
That's good. I'm trying to figure out how you got that tan working on that.
Well, I told you.
blood pressure.
That's right.
Working at the pool.
Okay.
I will only say that, as I mentioned to Rick earlier, it's a great story to tell, which is a comment to our leadership at the table and labor and all the staff, everyone. So that makes my job as the pitch man that much easier. So I appreciate it.
Okay, great. Let's go ahead and then move on to approval of the minutes.
So moved. Second.
Any questions, comments, changes? All fair to say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Roger, back reports.
No, I have none.
None? Okay. And then we have an ESG report. Richard, you want to talk about that?
Yes, sir. Morning, Commissioner.
Yes.
Chairman and Commissioners. I'm going to make my comments as brief as possible. I know we have a tight schedule today, and all of you were in receipt of this report last week in the mail, so hopefully you've had a chance to look at it, and if you have any questions, we can certainly address those today. Is there a slide set that we can go to? Kelly's
right here.
Yes, sir. Right. Next slide, please. So, the main message inside the front cover is from Roger, and it really says, this is it's a result of the challenge that you put in front of us at the beginning of the year to really talk about what we do in terms of sustainability. And we use the ESG familiar framework, but we've added a second S for safety because that's so critical in our industry. A couple of points from this letter are, it's never been more critical to communicate what we're doing. It may be one of the area's best kept secrets, the amount of work that goes on in terms of sustainability. There's a lot of misunderstanding in the public about what we're responsible for, what we're not responsible for, but a lot of people just don't know what we do. So that's one of the main messages. That's why we put this report together, to share with the public and continue that dialogue. And we've also asked the question, what else can we do? And that resulted in the Sustainability Action Plan that was published in August. So this report includes what we're doing and what else we can do. And if you go to the next slide, it's a very busy conversation. There's nearly 100 topics that are addressed in this report. And they cover, as I said, ESSNG, environment, social safety, and governance. So this is a way of just kind of describing the overall landscape of all the things that we do. If you go to the next slide, you know, there are basically six sections. The first section is the introduction, and then there's one on each of the four letters. Environment is really about how the park has doubled down on everything from clean air to clean water to recycling to NURDL surveys to different types of activities that involve, you know, inside the fence and also collaboration outside the fence. I'll get into that a little bit more. Social is about our commitment to our community stakeholders, listening to the stakeholders, understanding what their concerns are, and addressing them with things like the community grants program and other outreach programs. Safety really reflects the commitment that the port has in terms of nearly half our staff are either maintenance or fire or police, focusing on safety inside our operations as well as safety of the ship channel through our fire boats, safety of you know, citizens, in fact, saving somebody from jumping off the bridge and so forth. So that commitment is everlasting. And then the final one is governance, which really reflects the values of the port from the top down, from you know, the way we are governed in terms of the seven-member commission, all the way through the ethics training and the transparency, which you got to hear in terms of Tim's report on financial transparency. And then finally, section six talks about what are we going to do going forward, and that's really the Sustainability Action Plan, 27 new opportunities to lead, partner, or support sustainability initiatives. Go to the next slide. We also want to measure what we manage. So this is a sampling of the types of things that can be quantifiable. It talks about the safety record. It talks about the acreage that we've produced to enhance marine habitat and water quality. It talks about the money we spend just on an annual basis. We estimate about $10 million a year on an ongoing basis goes towards sustainability efforts. That does not include commitments like the Spry trucks that we bought and the hybrid electric trucks that we bought, or hybrid electric entry crates. So it's much more than that, but this is a conservative measurement. And then it also includes the 15% to 93% reduction in air emissions over the last 7 years that we've made through these types of efforts. And then finally, just a little bit about the dialogue that's going on. If we go to the next slide, please. This is a long list, it's a busy list, but it's indicative of the conversations we're having every day with outside entities, whether it's something that we can lead or we partner with. We've got conversations with energy companies, startups, the accelerators downtown, promoting things like alternative fuels, alternative transportation, trucks, the adoption of new technology in terms of hybrid electric or hydrogen fuel cell trucks and ammonia fueled ships, new ways of producing clean hydrogen. The list goes on and on. I'm going to lunch today with the Port Bureau to talk about the Synchronizer program. So it's a long list, and what we're doing is we're trying to project manage this list so that nothing slips through the cracks and we actually make progress, because the port is walking its talk. There are projects that which will produce results. Yesterday we had the first annual meeting of the Blue Sky Maritime Coalition, which the port is on the board of that commission, coalition, and, you know, the initial founding members were about 20 companies. 60 companies have joined so far, focused on decarbonization and shipping. It's a great conversation. It's a national conversation, and it's linked to global challenges like climate change. So with that, I'll stop and take any questions.
Commissioners?
It's an extremely well-done report.
Yes, it is.
Y'all did a great job. It was very interesting to read through, and I thought it was well done.
And, you know, I'm hearing feedback from the neighborhood that you're out there meeting with folks and spreading goodwill, and I appreciate that. In fact, I heard it yesterday morning. I having breakfast, and I think after the port was out here, and he wants to know what we think, and good work.
Well, thank you very much. I'd be remiss not to mention it's a broad team. Our community relations director, Maria Geary, our environmental affairs director, Trey Campbell, our finance group, multiple departments in the port organization are all working on this. It's a big team effort.
Good report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Anything else? Okay. So Roger, are we good? Staff reports? Okay.
Yeah, we're good there.
Okay, great. We are now moving to item E. But before I do that, though, I meant to say early on that we have a hard stop today at 10:30. There are a number of commissioners that have and staff that have things that they have to do after that. So just put that in. I'm gonna keep us on schedule for a hard stop at 10:30. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Perfect. Okay. So public appearances. Let's see. We have a few speakers. We have Antonio Williams Sr. with Green Living LLC. So are you here or online? I think it's probably online. So can you?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and see if we have. I see you there. Go ahead.
Well, I want to say thank you for allowing me to speak, and I hope everyone have an amazing day. But I want to address the possible opportunity of the situation when it comes to the containers, and hopefully provide a solution. I want to be able to inform the body that I have several different offsite locations. As well as trucks and everything that's prepared to be able to place these containers off-site. I don't know exactly who I would have to talk to. I would like to, like I said, of course, be a part of the solution. I know that there is a shortage of space for the containers, for these, for them to be, so these ships can unload. So, and if I can assist in any way in this scenario, I'll be more than happy. So I really wanted to kind of present that to the body and say that I can be a true solution. Like I said, having offsite locations for the additional containers, as well as, you know, the logistics to be able to move these containers from the port to offsite. I have several sites that's kind of pretty much all over Houston and a little that's outside of Houston. So I have up to maybe about 50 acres or more that can be utilized. So.
Okay, great. Roger, you want to respond?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. And we continue to look for solutions, any and everything that we can to expedite the flow of cargo through there. We'd be glad to talk to you about that. And connect you with those that are shipping the cargo for those opportunities to do that. I've got our chief of operations here, Jeff Davis, that we can connect you with. So do we have contact information for you, or how do we get a hold of you? Or,
I'll be happy to.
We have your email address. We have your email address, and we'll reach out to you immediately.
Great. Okay.
Thanks. We need all the help.
Thank you so much.
Speaking.
And I look forward to having the conversation. Please, everyone, enjoy
thank
the rest
you.
Of the evening.
Thank you. Okay. Our next speaker is Andrew Nasser from Environmental Defense Fund.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, great. Thank you. Again, my name is Elu Nasser. I'm with the Environmental Defense Fund, and appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning. Our goal in presenting at and attending every commission meeting is really that we want to see the Port Houston plan to be a vital part of a competitive, healthy, and equitable region that works for all who live here. And we're really heartened by the ES2G work that demonstrates new commitments to sustainability. However, without funding, these commitments may not come to fruition. And so we really hope that as part of the budget discussions today, there will be specific funding allocated to sustainability programs. And further, without specific targets, these projects are really just steps in the right direction with an unknown goal and an unmeasured goal. So we continue to encourage you to consider providing real targets, much like what other ports across the country are doing. There were recent announcements from Amazon, IKEA, Unilever, Michelin, Patagonia, and a number of other companies who have pledged to use only zero carbon marine fuels by 2050. And some other examples, Port of Los Angeles, Port of Long Beach, Seattle, Tacoma, Rotterdam, and others are making commitments like planning to reduce their port-related emissions by 80 or 90%. By 2050. And so these commitments are the types of commitments we would like to see from Port Houston. They are not only important for responsible governance, they right the wrong of existing community impacts. They're critical to responding to our global climate crisis, but they also allow the port to remain competitive in a market where clients are really shifting their focus towards this ES2G or ESG framing. Relevant to today's discussion, really the operating budget of any institution is a display of its commitments moving forward. And based on what was shared publicly yesterday, the level of financial commitment made to invest in sustainability is not quite clear. We do see that there's $327 million in this discretionary funds of the CIP, but they appear to be largely targeted towards new capacity. And we think the budget should demonstrate your commitment to creating a big, bold vision for an innovative and competitive Port Houston. COP26 in Glasgow asked that countries invest at least 5% of their gross revenues to solving the climate problem. We believe Port Houston can make similar commitments and that that funding can go towards building a 21st century zero emission supply chain. Ports on other coasts are doing exactly this. In fact, Port of Seattle just approved their budget yesterday, and it included a large number of funding for sustainability programs. And we think that this is a really important step towards building a clean and more efficient supply chain. So it's our hope that the budget allocations and discussions that happen today will represent this type and level of commitment. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments or questions? Okay, thank you. Appreciate your input. The next speaker is Stephanie Thomas from Public Citizen. Stephanie, are you online there?
Good morning. Can you all hear me?
Good morning. We can. Absolutely. Go ahead.
I'm trying to start my video. Okay, there we go. Thank you. Good morning.
There
good,
you
morning.
Go.
Good morning.
Good morning,
commissioners. Good morning, staff. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak today, and I do want to echo the comments that Ms. Nasser just made about the importance of creating clear goals and targets and making commitments, not just in words, but through monetary means as well, through the budgeting process. And I'm really delighted to see the ES2G document come out, and I'm looking forward to seeing the goods movement emission inventory and the updated clean air strategy plan as well. And one idea that I'd really love for the port to consider is, given some of the health concerns around the Houston Ship Channel, I'd love to see the port include a health equity index in its analysis of opportunities so that we can ensure that the projects that come forth are improving the health of those who are most impacted by things like air pollution, and really integrate community into some of the decision making that happens as well. So again, very pleased to see this step forward. I'd like to urge you to continue to dedicate time and resources to sustainability and equitable practices. And just really quickly, I'd like to thank Maria and Rich for joining the Healthy Pork Communities Coalition at a recent meeting. Their presence was incredibly valuable, and we really appreciate the opportunity to collaborate. Thank you all so much.
Appreciate it. Commissioners, any questions or comments? Okay, next up is Leticia Blaza from the Air Alliance of Houston. Are you there? Hopefully we don't have technical issues today.
Oh, can you hear me? I apologize.
We can. Perfect. Thank you. You're good to go.
Okay. Good morning, Court Commissioners and staff. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Leticia. I am with Air Alliance Houston, who is also part of the Healthy Ports Community Coalition. I also live near the port. I just want to, you know, continue to encourage the port to continue their investment and allocating of money to clean up the air pollution in our community. You know, we want to continue to build bridges with the port. I want to also echo what my colleague Stephanie Thomas just mentioned. We certainly appreciate the port and their amazing outreach efforts here recently with Maria Garrett. Certainly appreciate Rich as well and Trey, not just engaging ourselves, but the community members themselves as well. We didn't have that before, so we certainly, or at least, you know, not since I've been a part of HPCC, but we certainly want to continue to build on that. And after our Project 11 town hall meeting on Thursday, we had an enormous amount of community, you know, still wanting to be engaged. First of all, you know, we were really pleasantly surprised that we had over 70 participants on the call, or, you know, on the virtual meeting that wanted to hear more about what the port is doing and some of the concerns that they had to be addressed. So we certainly want to, you know, respond to their concerns. And some of their key issues, you know, was around additional truck and train traffic, which is currently already a huge nuisance in our communities. And so, you know, particularly in the East End, and you know, we want to, again, as Stephanie said, you know, we certainly want to make sure that not just the things that are the right things that are being said are also, you know, coming to fruition for us to see some alleviation. You know, there's also obviously concerns with health impacts around the port. And then there's also concerns around wildlife. And so again, these are a lot of the comments that we've received during and after the town hall meeting. And so we just wanna continue to engage the port and bringing these issues to the forefront as you guys continue to work and strive for a better health outcome out there. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, commissioners, any questions or comments? Okay, I appreciate your comments. And we have one more speaker, Ruben Shaw with the East End Hospital Clinics. Ruben, are you? Oh, there you go, he's here. And in person, great to see you.
Thank you very much, good to be here. It's my first time up here, so. Appreciate that. My name is Ruben Shaw. I'm the hospital administrator for East Houston Hospital Clinics with Advanced Diagnostics Healthcare System. I oversee a facility about 10, 15 minutes from here. We have a full range hospital, operating rooms, 24/7 emergency room. We have the full imaging breast center as well as multi-specialty clinic. We also have a family urgent care clinic about 10 minutes from here. So basically, here for two main reasons. One is to is the way that, you know, being so close to the port, getting the exposure that we could get so people know, you know, the services that we offer, which is a wide variety of medical services. Number two, we're looking for an opportunity, actually, to possibly do something on the port, which would be our bigger goal, actually. What we already have is there, but we'd like to actually set something up on site. So I'm obviously meeting most of you for all of you for the first time. I'm just looking to see who I can get in touch with to see if we can do this. I work with a variety of doctors, emergency room doctors, specialists. I'm a pharmacist by trade, so I've been a pharmacist for 20 plus years. I don't do practice it anymore, but healthcare, you know, is very strong with me. Being in pharmacy for 20 plus years, my brother's a physician, my dad's a pharmacist, so healthcare is very important. Good quality healthcare is very important for me, so just looking for an opportunity to grow our current place and possibly set up something else. But one of my colleagues, clients over here, actually just brought him along because we serve with quite a few employees when they have injuries on site, but he's been a person that he's come to me several times on many occasions. Some of the stuff that we're able to do, you know?
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is David O'Donnell. I'm the operations manager for Servitude Warehouse, right across the street from the port. So most of my days, I come traveling down Clinton. I'm inside the port. We have multiple locations right around the port. We have three, as a matter of fact. I just want to bring up a scenario of just how I got moving involved. Well, a little less than a month ago, I was driving to one of our off-site locations off of navigation. I noticed a driver coming out of the port. I remember the driver because when I came back 15 minutes later, the driver was parked on the side of the road, not moving. I made a U-turn to make sure everything was okay because I remember the driver, remember the truck. He was just slouched over in his tractor. I pulled up in front of the tractor, got out of the vehicle, knocked on the door. He was unresponsive, wasn't saying anything, but he was breathing. I immediately called 911. I spoke to Ruben and his staff, said, hey, I have somebody here. I don't know if he's insured. He's unresponsive. He's not talking very well. Can you see him at your facility? He said, yes. Please tell the EMS to bring him to our facility. We are expecting him. I deal with him all the time. I met Ruben 3 years ago for all my injuries, and about 80% of my employees, which is 257 employees, they actually see the hospital for their general practice. And it's helped me a lot because it keeps my workers' comp down, my loss prevention down, because they're getting my employees back to work fast. They've come on site for me to do wellness checks. They've done vaccines for the coronavirus. They have done the COVID checks to see if they're positive, which at one point in time we got 47 employees to come off positive. So we immediately started protocol to get everything done back in February. So they've helped us out a great deal. So, Ruben, what if you open up a local clinic or a clinic on the port to help these guys? I drove down the port, started asking my questions, asked the drivers, which you have a lot of drivers come out of the port, a lot of port drivers, how often do you, are you able to see a doctor? Man, I'm so busy, I'm over the road, you know, it's hard for me. I said, would it be beneficial for you if there's a mobile clinic on site? Just for general practice, check blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, whatever the case may be, even do a ZOP exam. Oh, it would be great, it's going to be a lot of time, I don't have to miss work. Okay, that's it. So that was my story on it, and I thought it was a good opportunity for both parties. Hopefully, that was some business with you guys. I'm just trying to help somebody out to do it.
We appreciate your story, and you know, whenever you can get healthcare closer to people who need it, who don't go get it because they have problems, then that's better for everybody, obviously. So hopefully, somebody at the port you can connect with. Our team,
we talk. Marcus is looking into this with our risk management people, and we'll evaluate this.
Great. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Roger, you want to make a couple comments?
Yeah, just thanks for all of those that have commented. I just wanted to add that you know, we've clearly demonstrated you know, in recent times with the ESG report today and our collaboration with the environmental groups out there, I think that relationship's important. We've demonstrated on just recently on the occasion our commitment to doing this. We, by reducing 66% of the, or improving the emission reduction by 66% over tier one level on this recent dredging project. Now we're going to continue to, and that was at a commitment by our vendor of $4.5 million to do that. So I think these things are, we're demonstrating they're very important to us. I just want to make sure that we ensure that the success depends upon continued collaboration as we go forward. whether it's in the infrastructure package where there's things tied to emissions, you know, those grant opportunities and those type of things are going to be very important for us. So I just want to emphasize that that working together, we've been very transparent in our outreach, and that collaboration directly with us, I think, is going to be very important in our continued success and what we achieve in the ESG, in our commitment to our community. So thank you for all that contributed today, and we'll continue that path forward.
Agreed. Thank you. Commissioners, any other comments or questions? Okay. Let's go ahead. I think we're done with public comment, Eric, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let's move into F1, finance, and our consideration and possible action of our proposed fiscal 2020 operating and capital budget.
Super. Thank you, Chairman. First, forgive me. I have allergies or something today, so I might clear my throat occasionally, but all is well. Good morning. Thank you for your time.
You were last night, Ms.
Sir, no, as I was by the pool. Not that pleasant.
Okay.
All right. It's on the screen. It's on your smaller screens, and you also have the hard material that was delivered today. Please don't hesitate to interrupt as we go. A few house cleaning, of course, items. A reminder that no property taxes, Harris County property taxes, are considered in this operating budget. Those are reserved exclusively for debt service on the outstanding GO bonds. Also, as you'll remember, any item above 50K will be brought to this governing body for approval, be that an operating project or a capital project. So as those justifications come through, we're ready for award. Of course, you'll approve each of those individually. All right, in terms of content, 1-2 just says we'll talk a little bit about assumptions, the income statement, graphical view, and some numbers, look at cargo, revenue and expenses, headcount, and then close with the capital plan and liquidity outlook for the coming year. Page 1-3, a lot of words, but if you'll bear with me, we'll get it pretty quickly. Gives you a good foundation for what we're going to talk about today. Container terminal unit growth, on the surface, 9% growth, looks very healthy. You look at the first subtext there, though, we're pushing out, anticipate pushing out a growth of around 42% of empty boxes as we begin to move the record level of import loads, move those empties back out of the terminal. Underneath that, what's driving the P&L, of course, are an assumption of import loads growing about 5%. That's roughly in line with what we expect the market to bear in the Texas economy. Texas GDP is projected around 5.6% growth next year. Again, that's coming off tremendous double-digit growth in 2021. Export loads expanding about 2% next year. There's probably opportunity here as we see polyethylene resins beginning to pick up as of late and projected to do well. General cargoes, in general, double-digit growth looking next year. They are recovering nicely this year. You may have seen numbers through October. Our steel is actually up 37% year-to-date compared to last year. Indications are that will continue strong, whether that's obviously drilling is what's sitting on the deck today, and rig count looks good. Other general cargoes, those businesses still recovering from the pandemic, so indications are that will be solid next year. This budget does comprehend the CPI adjustment. There's a subsequent agenda item for your consideration, and that will take the container tariff that's subject to CPI up just over 5%, 5.4%, which is based on the CPI growth from July to July. And for general cargoes, we have 3% considered for you today for their increase on CPI. So that is a separate agenda item, but it is comprehended in the revenue projections you'll see. From a spending perspective, salary and benefits, as you'll remember, is about 50% of our operating costs in total. Those salary and benefits are growing, of course, related to new headcount, to replacement headcount, ongoing merit program tied to performance. We've done a market-based update to our salary structures. We do that annually, but we tend to watch to make sure we're doing the right thing, let it change for a number of years, and when it's solid, we'll take action. That is in the benefit, I'm sorry, that is in the budget for 22, and a continuation of our incentive program as we've done, I believe, the last 2 years. This will be year three in 2022. And again, you see there we have a new headcount request for a request for 22 new headcount next year, and a large number of replacement and open positions of about 51 as well that are open. The capital plan is pretty robust at $327 million next year. That includes clearly 68% of that is on the container terminals themselves as we look to accelerate capacity given demand and justification. And then, as you've seen before, we anticipate awarding over $400 million in Project 11 awards next year as well. All that rolls together in your bottom bullet that says, with all these assumptions considered from a liquidity perspective, we look quite strong, of course, exiting this year and next year, and short-term look very sound. So overall, good solid plan we believe we're putting forward. Next, page 14 is a high-level graphic overview of the P&L, left side, of course, being 2020. In the center, this is where we were as of September, effectively. This has September actuals and 3 months of forecast, looking at $460 million of revenue for the year. October came in very strong as well, about $20 million over that. So we're seeing $480. And with continued strong results, we could cautiously see new record levels in 2021. So a very favorable year for all considered. And then to the right there is your budget proposal, $478 million of operating revenues, growing 4% year over year. It's a little clouded because within that, again, we have the container business growing in loads around 4 to 5%. We have CPI on top of that, but storage, we're expecting those the dwell times on those import boxes to begin to diminish. We are seeing a little bit of that already, but don't have a trend just yet. So we anticipate those storage revenues easing into next year. You wash all that together, and you're about 4% revenue growth year over year, generating $217 million or 4% growth in cash generation next year.
And one quick question. Sure. Does this, I'm assuming that your figures are based on current commitments that we have from the lines. This does not,
correct.
If we're able to get more lines coming in, that's going to be on top of what you projected.
It's a great point. And I believe that's called out somewhere, at least in my notes. This assumes no new services for next year. Now, we brought in the one at BCT O&E sometime during 2021, so you're getting a full year of that service, but otherwise no new services assumed in this plan. Okay. 1-5, a lot of numbers. I'll just take you to the right-hand column is the budget, which we've largely talked through. You see, again, revenue of $478 million. That's 4% growth. If you'll drop a few lines down to gross margin, so that's the measure of the efficiency and the generation within our operations. You see they're growing, I'm sorry, dropping a point from around 40.6 points of margin down to 39.5. Again, a mixed bag in there. Depreciation is growing about $10 million for new capacity that we anticipate putting in place. We've also, again, trimmed down storage in the next year. So that combination is costing us about 4 points of gross margin decline next year. And then you backfill that with the volume absorption. So we'll get some lift from higher volumes next year, overall down about a point. As you can see, if you'll drop a few lines down to net operating cash flow, you strip out the depreciation effectively, and you can see that that's growing nicely in line with revenues for next year. Going back up just a couple lines to general administrative expenses, requesting about a $3 million increase in G&A year over year. That's largely salaries and benefits. We've talked about new headcount and the various merit and incentive programs is in that number. Fees and services related to some cyber security initiatives and disaster recovery other P&D things, parks, business equity, trade development, and other overhead. We anticipate or are budgeting to return to sort of a business as usual, if you will, ability to be out in the community, out with our customers more next year. So that's influencing that $3 million increase in G&A year over year. Dropping to the bottom right corner there, you see the proposal or the reality, perhaps, of interest expense on our revenue debt recently sold. $15.5 million of interest expense anticipated next year. And beneath that,
based on the lower interest rate that you received, is that number coming down?
It should come down a pinch. That's correct. I've not seen new numbers on that, but it's pretty fresh news. That should give us a little bit of relief.
That's a self-amortizing debt.
Correct. That's correct.
20-year, roughly, term.
Right.
At that rate, that amortizes over a 20-year period.
That's exactly right.
That's just your interest cost, or is that your?
That is just interest as it relates to the rest is on the balance sheet, right? I think, our weighted average maturity is just under 19 years, and so that was Rick's reference. Yeah, they're 30-year term bonds, but again, they were sold in tranches from 1 year up to 30, so that'll give us about a 19-year maturity. The other non-operating income, a positive 10888 number you see, fantastic outlook for grant funds. We're very fortunate to have around $20 million coming in from grants next year in 2022. Rich Burns and his team worked that very diligently for us, offset by contributions we'll make for Port Road at Bayport. That's treated as an expense contribution because it's not our road. So that's a net $10 million gain to get to net income.
This also does not include any funds from the feds that just passed the infrastructure.
Yes, sir.
So that'll be, presumably, we're going to get a reasonable share of that money too.
Yes.
So that'd be treated as, I'm assuming, as non-operating income.
It would be. That's right. Be below the line. Yes.
We only put grants that we know we have into the budget. We never anticipate getting a grant.
Right. Okay. Let's look at cargoes for a minute on 1-6. Again, we've talked through containers to a large extent. Again, you see the 9% growth we anticipate in 2022, again, heavily influenced by the empties moving next year, but a good solid growth. The 23 numbers represent about a 6% growth, so we anticipate a fairly strong year next year. Some of that influenced by additional resin production capacity, packaging capacity coming online around us. So that should help us, again, have at this point, have a favorable outlook into 23. Steel, we mentioned, has been strong, and signals are trade-wise and customer-wise that should continue into next year as well. 1-7, a few more commodities. Autos, because it is a visible commodity, really returning to sort of 2019 actual levels and to what our expectations were pre-pandemic. That's here at the Turning Basin with a particular customer and that at Bayport. So that's autos returning to a fairly normal level. Other general cargoes, largely cement with a good business there and a good customer relationship and the cement coming in. Project cargo grains, again, across those commodities, we expect continued success into next year. Page 1.8 is a simple bridge that takes you from the operating revenue of $460 million for 21 to the 478 for this year, and really a very simple bridge. Containers, again, growing about $16 million year over year. You got to slice and dice that. The volume and the tariff changes will bring about $28 million of growth in revenue, but we do anticipate storage. Coming down to normal levels. We're not saying it suddenly, improves to where we were in 2019, but nonetheless, coming down. So that nets you $16 million favorable. Turning Basin, again, you saw some of the cargoes. Some of those directly relate to our revenue. Some of those are drive wharfage and dockage and things, and the other are more tied to lease valuations and escalations, some of which have, obviously, cargo guarantees within them. So that gives you the bridge to our 478 for next year. The mix on 1-9 is largely unchanged in terms of containers at 77, normally 78-79% of our business. But again, because of the tremendous grant monies anticipated in 22, that has pulled that container piece down just a bit. 77% of our revenues, 11% from Turning Basin. Harbor, that's largely harbor fees for fire protection services. Channel, and here are your submerged lands and other DMA revenues. We are seeing nice improvement in that submerged lands program, but pacing that obviously carefully, and but seeing it move the right direction. Again, the bottom bullet point there on the page around non-operating, you see the three large grants that are coming in next year. They're reimbursement based, right? So we spend the monies, we send the backup and information to the granting agencies, and they reimburse us for those costs. The PIDP grant for Wharf 6, Port Road, I mentioned, with essentially TxDOT. And then we begin to see the infra grant monies coming in next year with the BCT redevelopment. And that's a big number. You'll remember that was $79 million over roughly a five-year period. And the numbers get much bigger in the out year. So we're excited about that. And it does put pressure on our ability to execute that project and get that capacity online, both from a customer perspective as well as from a grant perspective. 110 is a bit busy page. Now you're looking at total, total expenses. This is still operating expenses. That's G&A plus operating, so those are operations plus overhead, moving from 329 up to $348 million next year, separated from operating and G&A. So on the top of the page, I referenced the depreciation coming up around $10 million. That's probably a little hot. It will come down throughout the year, just as timing of projects placed in service. A lot of container capacity, the BCT gate, CY2 South, Wharf 3 cranes, et cetera, driving up depreciation. Dredge maintenance, our maintenance dredge for PHA is increasing into next year as well. You see salaries and benefits, both PHA and ILA, combined with, again, the merit program, the market-based salary structure changes, incentive program, some monies we moved up into that category, causing around an $8 million increase. And then there are several projects that we had in 2021 that won't repeat in 2022. That's why it's a bracketed $2 million less. Crane relocation for cranes at BCT, removing to Bayport, and some splash zone painting, some things that will repeat every couple of years there. So that's why that's a reduction. G&A, I think we mentioned now the, P&D related parks is around $500,000-$600,000. For next year, business equity as we begin to invest in training, capacity building, consulting with DEI, et cetera. Trade development, as well as other advocacy efforts that Carrick is leading, causing some increase in expense. Again, some of that is because we've been unable to execute those projects in the last couple of years with the pandemic situation. So, hoping to return to our ability to do that. As we know, those advocacy dollars generate very real returns for us, as you see in our grant monies and project clearance and approvals, et cetera. So we appreciate that. Salaries and benefits, again, new replacement headcount, merit, market adjusts, incentive program, which is actually a reduction here in the G&A area. Fees and services, a very busy area. The big ticket items being cybersecurity related, disaster recovery data center, and others causing an increase. And then we moved some overhead into capital projects. That's the $1 million credit. That's a take it out of G&A, and we're able to capitalize that as appropriate to capital projects. Cash-wise, you're looking at expense growing about 3.5% in relation to that 4% revenue growth, round numbers. Overall, so we feel good about expenses next year. It's a conservative because it is a budget outlook. It assumes full employment, that all the requisitions are filled, and as you know, we struggle with that for a variety of reasons. From a mix, again, this is largely unchanged. On the right side of the large pie is, of course, salary and benefits, which includes the ILA. salaries and benefits of around $65 million next year, PHA around 117. So rough numbers, you know, half of our expenses are tied up with salaries and benefits, and then you can spin around the pie there as needed. Again, now my reference to total expense, you know, we're looking at operating that we just bridged plus the non-operating expenses of about $29 million next year. You know, that bottom line, text line, that includes that interest expense we mentioned on our revenue debt of 15.5 and the contribution side for Port Road of about $12 million. So that's what makes up the non-operating bucket for next year. 112 is our headcount proposal to you for 2022. You can see towards the left, our actual headcount, 685 end of year last year, growing to 693 at September. We still have 51 open approved recs, 8 hungover from 20 and 21 we've yet to fill, and 43 replacements. It is a bit bigger hill to take this year. 2020, we missed headcount by maybe 6%, which is higher than normal. Pandemic related is folks relook at their work patterns and we look at the marketplace, the workplace. We're a little bit heavy this year on the amount of replacement requisitions. The budget again assumes all of those are in place and that's our request. In addition to the 22 that we are requesting for new headcount in 2022, down to a 766 total. Any questions on that? I don't want to go too fast as it relates to that.
Will it affect the labor force?
Probably let Tom or Jessica, if she's on the line, comment on that. That as you see in the numbers, it is a slower hiring pattern. You know, the bulk of those 43 replacements are in some operations areas and maintenance and elsewhere. So, short answer, yes, I think we are seeing
it's
that.
Slowing us down. It's not killing us, but it's slowing us down.
Sure is. Sure is. Okay, next, now turning to capital and liquidity. A $327 million plan for next year's PHA capital, and again, over $400 million for Project 11 commitments anticipated for next year. As you see in the verbiage there, this was segments 1B2. And 1C, and I believe the remainder of our contribution for removal and relocation of pipelines, really through 22 awards, that will conclude our LPP, if you will, our commitment before we move to cost share in 23 and beyond. We cut our PHA projects somewhat arbitrarily, admittedly, into strategic recapitalization, channel, and other. Strategic, as you can see in the subtext, largely Bayport, new growth opportunities, Yard 1 North, I believe that's CY1 North, Wharf 7, East End Design. Those are in bold on the screen, or if you can see the little screen up ahead, those were both accelerated into this year. Wharf 7 was Wharf 7 cranes coming in. We had hoped to pull those into to 21, but I think that will hit in 2022. East End Design we pulled in to accelerate design of that area for largely container storage business. Next Generation ERP will begin to hit capital next year, around $5 million for that. And there's others out there as well, strategic items in real estate, designing the EOB, executive office building, et cetera, under strategic. Recapitalization, largely, as you see again, the subtext, Barber's Cut and Turning Basin. We have a new BCT maintenance facility planned out there for next year. Container Yard 3 RTGs, Container Yard 4 and 5 North, and other design of container yards at BCT. Again, the bold that you see are accelerated projects. Again, given demand and given justification, we will accelerate those to the greatest extent possible. Turning Basin, again, just ensuring we continue to invest as appropriate in these assets upstream, if you will,
provide capacity for our customers and safe cargo moving areas. Channel projects are largely dredging, and then remaining projects, as you see on the screen, maintenance equipment, that's tractors, hybrid equipment, et cetera, PCC renovations, smart control lighting, that's the LEDs on the terminals, and our ability to control those, again, another a smart environmental feature that we're working on terminals. So that's an overview of the $327 million capital plan.
A couple things that I want to just kind of hit on before we move forward on this, and that is so today we're going to entertain a motion to approve these projects. The operating budget and the capital plan and the five-year plan as well. And I just want to make sure that everyone understands that we're approving these in this broad sense, right? So it's an overarching, here's our plan, and we're going to go forward with that plan. But what that also means is that, as Tim mentioned at the beginning of the discussion, is that any contract or any expenditure over $50,000 has to come back to the commission for approval. Okay, so I know each commissioner had individual briefings and some were longer than others, and which is good. And in the discussion, at least in the one that I had, which was a couple hours, the question of, well, like for example, I'll use Wharf 7 as an example. So right now we're building Wharf 6, and we approved that maybe a year or so ago, and we're in the process of building that. And when we did that, the staff brought an analysis that showed why we should do it. Supply and demand analysis of how many containers we're going to have in the future and how we're going to grow and how we need to build infrastructure to match that growth going forward, right? And they also showed the revenue that we should be able to get from that project once it was completed, and then kind of a return on investment analysis that said that showed why we should do it, right? And I think that's a really critical part of the process that we need to go through as a commission, is to challenge management on those issues, and not that we think they're wrong or bad or anything. It's just a matter of that's what you should do generally when you approve it. You know, if you add up Project 11, the commitments we've already made, plus the commitments, this $300 plus million additional commitments, it's, you know, a billion here, a billion there, right? And so it's a lot of money. And so to me, I think that's really important for us to do that. So we're not doing that today, but what we will be doing when those projects come to us is we'll look at the ROIs, the supply demand analysis that management has done, and also I think we ought to add, you know, an environmental and health and equity piece of the equation as well when we analyze it. So if we're going to build Wharf 7, what does that do to our environmental situation? What does it do to health and equity? And I think those are really important things as part of that equation. And so today when we vote on this, we're not voting carte blanche, let them, you know, on all this money. What we're saying is we believe in the overarching plan. And then as they go forward, the staff and the management will bring that back to us with those kind of with that kind of analysis. Just in the broader piece too, since I'm talking about this broad stuff, one of the things I think we need to do when you start adding up all this money, right? It's a lot of money, because if you take our capital expenditures that we're doing, just port capital expenditures that we've already approved plus what we're going to approve, I mean, it's definitely $1 billion. Or more, 1.1 billion, I think is the number that Tim gave me on those numbers. And then when you take Project 11, that's another $1 billion, right? So even though we're going to fund those in various ways, and we need to make sure that I think it's safe to say that this is the biggest capital projects from a dollar perspective and a investment perspective, both on our own docks and in the channel, that we've ever done in the history of the port, right? I mean, that's pretty easy to say that. So with that said, then what I would like to see, and I think the commission, I've had a number of conversations with commissioners, is that like Project 11, if you think how we dealt with Project 11, we knew that was a really important project to get done, and we spent
what, over $40 million in advance at risk designing and positioning the port so that we could actually start construction years earlier than we would have otherwise done if we would just been a methodical, go through the normal process that ports generally do. And we were able to do that because the commission's ability to know that we could fund it, number one, and number two, we knew it was going to get approved. How fast, we didn't know, but so we jump-started that project, and that's going to save us a ton of money, bring the channel in quicker than it would have otherwise been, which will create more jobs and create more, you know, activity for our region, which is what our jobs are all about, right? So if we're going to, we have another $1.1 billion of port stuff. So what we need to think about is how do we expedite that $1.1 billion? How do we need to think out of the box. We need to do design builds. We need to figure out how we, and that $1.1 billion that we're talking about is projects that we control as a port that we're designing, we're letting those contracts, we're putting that forward, and that's, there's no federal government issue around that. It's just how do we do it as a team, and how do we do it as the port. And so we need to really think out of the box, and especially in this environment of supply chain issues and labor shortages and rising costs. The faster we get things built, the less they cost, because there's nothing, costs aren't going down, they're going up, right? We know inflation is a big issue. So I want to create this urgency in that $1.1 billion for our teams. So we need to do things that we hadn't done in the past. And I don't know what that is. You all figured out. But we need to get things done quicker. We need to take more risk on the front end, just like we did on Project 11. And that's going to ultimately save us time and money if we think that way. And oftentimes, you know, it's hard to do that. But what you have to do is shake things up and do things differently, like a design-build concept. We haven't done much of that. And maybe we need to.
I'm a big advocate of design.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then the third part of that, of this equation is in the past, and I think this is Project 11 has helped us sort of create a mechanism for the commission to review what's going on, right? Because each time that we approve money for design, we always had a timeline. Here's the timeline. We have this timeline that we can monitor, and we could also monitor the cost side of the equation as well. And I think on this other $1.1 billion and also on the Project 11, I think that we need to see, I think, at least quarterly, a budget reconciliation of where we are compared to where we thought we are and what we would be. And then we also need to see a timeline analysis. If we thought it was going to take X amount of time, where are we on that timeline, and are we falling, are we ahead or are we behind? And if we are behind, then what are we going to do to get back on the schedule, right? And so I think that needs to be a quarterly thing going forward once we approve this project. And then I think for what helps me and I think it would help the commissioners as well is a monthly one-page synopsis. Wharf 6 is $200 million. We're good on our budget. Real simple one page, not for each project, but for all the projects. And our timeline is supposed to have, here are the milestones on what we're supposed to do, and here's where we are on the milestones. And what that will do is hold everyone in the chain accountable for where they're going and create an urgency to make sure that we are hitting those dates. And so I think that's something that I talked to Roger about it, and Roger's supportive of that. Maybe not exactly what we've done in the past, but it's something. If we're going to manage $2 billion worth of capital in the next, you know, 3 years, we need to really understand the time, the money, and then rather than getting a change order, you know, at the end, we need to know when the problem happens so that we can be more proactive to that. That's just from a commission perspective. So with all that said, I'm personally good with the budgets, the way they're set up, the capital budgets, the way they're set up, with the proviso that they're going to bring them back to us and make the ROI discussion, and then with this new process going forward, we should be able to, you know, manage it really well. And I'm not concerned that they're not managing it well. I just have this sort of
you that, and one of my old, my retiring chief operating officer uses this concept. It's inspect what you expect. And if you don't measure it, then oftentimes you're not going to be able to influence the outcome. And so that said, I just want to have that broad conversation with the commission. Any questions or comments about
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask you, if I heard you right, you said we're going to be between channel infrastructure, $2 billion we got to come up with in the next 3 years. Did I hear you right?
I think it's three or four.
So how, and you feel comfortable that the direction we're in now, we're going to be able to fund that?
I do. Based on the analysis that we have done and the cash flow that we have coming in, I mean, when you start looking at the cash flow, I mean, what's our projected cash flow this year?
220,
right? So if you add 220 million times three, that's 600 million, right? Or 700 million. And we just did a $400 million bond deal, that's a billion. And then the federal match, and when you think about our federal match, I mean, we know that we're going to build the Bay Reach part of the channel with the funds that we've already just spent for just financed and our internally generated cash flow. And then the question will be, how do we do the rest of the channel? And the rest of the channel, ultimately, that's where industry needs to come to the table, because if we wait, you know, hopefully we have some federal government money also on this $1.2 trillion. And, but if we don't, and then the upper part of the channel is just going to go through the normal federal process, 65-35, and it might take another 10 years to do the upper part of the channel, and that's where the industry side of the equation needs to come to play.
Yeah.
If they want it faster, then they're going to have to, you know, bring the money.
I just want to make sure, because, you know, right now, and Roger might argue with me, we've had disagreements about it, but our capacity, we're running short of capacity right now. In these container terminals.
I understand.
These lines are saying they want to bring as much cargo as they can to Houston. We can't handle it right now. We even turn ships away now because we're kindly out of capacity. We need more cranes immediately, and this is my opinion. I see what goes on there every day. We need more equipment right now. There's a lot of things we need. And my fear is when we get down the road 2 or 3 years from now, we get this channel started, I think it's going to boom, but we're going to have money to make that happen. And I just want you to assure me that going this direction, we're going to be able to get that funding when we need it to make this point.
I'm highly confident with our management team that we have here, with our AA-plus credit rating, with a $220 million cash flow that we're generating every single year, that boom is going to continue. I agree with you, the boom's coming, and it's happening now. That cash flow is going to continue to grow. We're going to reinvest it in our business, which means buying cranes, building wharfs, improving the utility that we have in our areas, and we'll have the capital to do it.
But as you grow in the business, your cost is going to go up too.
I understand.
You're going to make more revenue, but your cost is going up too. So we've got to keep all that. And just one other thing.
Sure.
The last meeting or so, I understand you said in 23 we would be short some funding.
Yes, and that's coming up.
That's coming up?
That's coming up on the
screen.
Yes, sir.
I hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, so listen, I'm on board with what the team, and I'm taking your confidence that we're going to be able to build this port the way you think we can fund it. That's my only concern. I want it to grow, and we have the opportunity.
I think we're in a unique position because of our financial strength to do exactly what you
said. And if we don't, then you've got a plan, right?
Yes,
to get
sir.
Additional money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We still have to factor in the fact that this is one of the largest ports, and Uncle Biden is saying that he's going to drop a little bit of money, and I don't see how they can ignore giving money to Houston. Now, where that money gets spent, I'm not for sure. It doesn't take some of the pressure off that we're talking about right now, but we can't talk about it because we won't have it. But we know they've got to send money to Houston. And maybe the roads that you're talking about, it may be money that we can divert to the channel, but we know there's something coming. They can't ignore this port. It's just too important.
That's right. I think that all the discussion is exactly right. They're not going to ignore us, but on the other hand, you can't count on it, right?
No, that's right.
And so
we don't have it.
And we aren't counting on it at this point, even though you have, you know, I think we had, what, $89 million we got on road on the War 6, a grant?
Yeah, that was the grant program. And that's going to be the path forward, I think, to this infrastructure, is the ability to compete for those amongst other entities nationwide to get those. There's $17 billion dedicated for ports, but that's spread up in a lot of different areas. But we're going to compete for those things. And if I may, real quick, Chairman, we've been accelerating our capital over the last 5 years faster than we ever thought about 5 years ago. We're doubling down on that, and we have to do that by pushing the design effort forward. We just had some meetings there yesterday. We're planning on doing this in the plan faster. And the other thing is we're holding ourselves accountable. I mean, that's a goal on the table for everybody in the organization for next year, to deliver on our commitment, what we're going to do next year in the capital plan. And, of course, we're going to bring those projects as they're ready before they award. And we also have the ability to track and have the visibility of where we are on these projects. All those things we can do. So we're going to be in the game. And we've also already made the ask prior to the infrastructure bill. It's very important that the federal government gets the appropriation of their money for their cost share of the channel as we move forward as well. So those things are in place. We'll continue to push for those, but we're highly engaged. And yes, we are in an unusual scenario where we were 20% ahead of the demand curve before this surge hit. We had a 100 extra acres, more or less. That's all used up because things are sitting there, containers are sitting there on the terminal now. We're fortunate we were in that position to have the foresight to plan ahead or whatever. We need to keep doing that. I think that'll eventually subside, but we got to keep pushing.
So my only other question now, when can we discuss and talk about Terminal 7?
About what?
Terminal 7. Wharf 7.
Well,
because we need to be looking at that, in my opinion, now.
We are.
It's already.
We are moving forward with the design.
It's already under design.
Okay.
And you're going to be voting on that today as a broad plan that we have built forward with 7, and then they'll bring that to us when they're ready to talk about pulling the trigger on it.
Let me ask you a question. Is that in the budget?
Construction to begin in 22.
Construction to begin in 22.
Design this year.
That's the plan.
Okay.
That's good.
Dredging for Dock 7 is being advertised next week.
For 7?
For 7.
Okay.
For award in the first quarter.
And Wharf 6 is what, a year away from completion, too. So we're cascading.
We're in advance project without completion.
Okay, so you've been in this business.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make any sense when you negotiate contracts that you offer bonuses if they get it done in a certain time, or is that not a good idea anymore?
I am highly confident that our team knows how to negotiate all those kind of things in the contract.
I don't know.
Penalties and bonuses.
But I don't know if we've ever.
We've just recently done some incentives on Dock 3, I believe.
Okay.
We did.
Well, that's my point on thinking out of the box.
Yeah.
If you haven't done something to expedite a project, you need to figure out how, right? And if we haven't done design builds, we need to put that on the table. And so my challenge to management, and our challenge as a commission to our management team, is think out of the box, get it done quicker and cheaper. If you get it done quicker, it usually is cheaper.
Yes,
because of inflation. And we know, I don't know if inflation is transitory or not. I know that labor is tight everywhere. You know that. And the faster we get it done, the faster we're able to increase capacity, increase revenue, which gives the ability to, it's a flywheel effect where we have the ability to create more cash and invest more. And when you're investing more, it's all about creating more jobs for everyone, right? That's what we're trying to do. So to me, the challenge in this budget to me is, let's figure out how to do it faster, cheaper, you know, and do it in a way that maybe you hadn't thought about doing it in the past. And then let's set the targets and set the budgets and the timelines, and then let's make sure everybody's held accountable for those.
So do we know when we'll get a shovel in the ground, Charles, with, under the new deal with the dredging people updating their equipment? What is the projection?
How about for phase 1A?
Yeah, for phase 1A, we're actually hopefully executing the contract today. We've already been working on the SCRs, the welding manufacturer. The tentative start date right now, subject to the shipyards, is mechanical in February, hydraulic dredging in March. Done by the end of the year.
Kim, I'm going to ask you to go.
Sir,
I need, we need to move this forward, otherwise we're going to miss our deadline. So would you go to the summary cash planning deal and then just spend a couple of minutes on that? It shows that we need capital, but we have the ability in lots of different ways to get that capital.
Yes. So let's go just one page to 114. It's a lot of numbers. I'll hit just the highlights on here. What you're looking at is your... we call it award capacity. These are uncommitted funds that are available to the Port Commission to award future projects. And we tell you this monthly, about $100 million is your uncommitted number available to award. So top left, you see we're beginning with around $115 million. Very bottom right, 2023, we're also ending at around 114. So we like to maintain around $100 million available for opportunistic items, et cetera, for the Port Commission. The guts of it in between get a little messy, but I'll be brief. As you know, we have proceeds from our debt issuance coming in. I'm in the 2021 column. December 9 will generate the 220 of cash flow and grant funds. We have a line of credit, effectively a note purchase program out there for $100 million that you approved in October. Then you see our projected 2021 awards. 236, that will probably end up somewhere south of 200 million. You know, we've awarded segment 1A, et cetera. So we will end this year very strong, $400 to $500 million. You roll that forward, there's just a few circles there. One, we'll need to increase our credit instruments by as much as $250 million next year. You see the line, it's not on your page, but that's to allow us, again, the capacity to award Project 11 numbers next year in excess of $400 million. We won't pull down any of that cash, but it's available for you to award, you know, again, almost $800 million next year of capital. So it's a paper transaction, but we'll have something in place for you to do that. And then again, in terms of awards, there's the 327 we mentioned, the $460 million Project 11 that we mentioned, ending next year around $140 million of award capacity. 2023, to your point, Commissioner Fitzgerald, mathematically, this shows that we need additional cash support sometime in as early as 2023. As the stale finance guy, I think that's probably a little early. I don't see that happening just at that pace. I think our cash projections are probably conservative. It will be in a good position. And, you know, our project schedules are extremely aggressive to hit this. We'd love to hit it, but just realistically, I think that 250 is either coming down in amount or pushing out as well into future years.
I'm hoping you need it, because that means you spent
the money faster. Sure, absolutely. That's what we're
saying is that we commit, but we don't spend the money.
Right.
So, and I want them to spend the money as fast as possible, so we need that money in 2023, and we go out and do a bond issue or do something to generate that fund. And we have a AA-plus credit rating. We could also do geo bonds or whatever we decide to do. And, by the way, that money could be funded, in fact, by getting our fair share of the $1.2 trillion infrastructure plan, too.
Right?
So there's a lot of ways to fund that money in the future. And I'm personally not worried that we're going to be in a cash bind anytime soon.
That's right. And I wanted to play that through and all of the debt service related to it from a conservative perspective, showing affordability. And again, you end up at the end of the year with that still over $100 million available, and that's what we're solving for. So I'll stop there. That really concludes our presentation of 2022 operating capital budget. I will obviously entertain any questions or ask.
I think one of the major pieces. A, we have a lot of projects to approve. B, we have the cash to fund it, and then we're going to have a bite at the apple
of talking about what it is and how to make it faster, better, and as they bring it to us. So, is there
a motion? One other question.
Yes, sir.
As far as infrastructure is concerned, after 7, then our next option will be the
Dock one.
And then we have the cruise terminal that we can change, right?
Okay. And feeding all that.
Well, that'll get us past not me being here.
I don't know.
Not
if we start building quick enough.
I hope y'all do.
I hope you do. I'm going to get you. I like the design build proposition.
Let me say this. I do have a personal problem I'm going to have to attend. So here in a little bit, I'll have to leave. But I want you to know that I went through the budget. I think I understand it to the best I can. But I'm very much in favor of everything we're doing. And I'm in favor of this budget, and we'll just hope for the best, and that's all we can do.
We need
the projection anyhow.
Yes, we need a motion to approve the budget.
No moving.
I second it.
Any questions, comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And if we need to borrow money, we'll borrow it from
Roger,
Chairman.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I'll throw all my Port Authority pay in.
I like the way you frame it, Chairman. I'm going to approve the budget today, but we're going to examine each and every.
Oh, yeah.
Sir. So, okay, the other part of the equation on this is we have a 5-year operating plan in here, and that's been reviewed with each person. We don't need a motion to approve that. So just look at it at your leisure. If you have questions, you can call Tim or Roger. Item G is approving this tariff increase that Tim described earlier.
So moved.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. We do have a very brief executive session that we're going to do.
Real brief.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah. Will now convene the closed meeting as approved by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with the Texas deliberate regarding real estate, economic development negotiations or incentives, the funded evaluation of public employees and security related matters. The Board Commission reconvene public session after the closed meeting.